Yeah, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Clashes between Turkey and U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Force fighters eased somewhat Tuesday, a week after Turkey and its rebel allies intervened in northern Syria and captured Jarablus with dual objectives of clearing the border area of Islamic State and Kurdish forces. U.S. spokesman John Kirby welcomed the pause in fighting, adding that previous clashes take away from the united campaign against the IS group, also known as Daesh.
We've seen largely over the last 12 to 18 hours that there has been calm, and of course that's welcome. As we said yesterday, that we don't believe tactical operations between members of the SDF and Turkish forces or Turkish or forces supported by Turkey to be productive in terms of the fight against Daesh.
The commander of the U.S. Central Command, Army General Joseph Votel, Tuesday underscored the vital role both the SDF and Turkey play in degrading and destroying the IS group.
We rely on both Turkey and the Syrian Democratic Forces to help us in our fight against ISIL. Both of them are critical to it. Turkey certainly plays an extraordinarily important role with their access, basing, overflight, a variety of things that they do, and their operations along the border against ISIL are extraordinarily important and welcome. We also value the contributions of the Syrian Democratic Forces, who have been a good partner to us in helping address the ISIL threat in the area.
Votel said the Syrian Kurds have largely crossed back over to the eastern side of the Euphrates River in a move designed to ease Turkish concerns about a future Kurdish autonomous region. Gabonese opposition presidential candidate Jean Ping reportedly said results from Saturday's election his team tabulated show he defeated incumbent Ali Bongo. The tiny West Central Nation's interior minister was set to announce official results late Tuesday. This is VOA News. The Islamic State said a prominent and long-serving leader was killed in what's believed to have been a U.S. strike in Syria. The IS-operated news agency, Amaq, said Abu Mohammed el-Adnani was killed while surveying operations to repel military campaigns in Aleppo. U.S. defense officials quoted as saying a senior ISIL leader was targeted Tuesday traveling in al-Bab, but stopped short of confirming it was Adnani. Deakin University terror expert Greg Barton said he's more than a spokesman for the IS group and the leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi.
He's not just somebody who's been an effective spokesperson in the role of a religious leader issuing fatwa, but also a strategist and a planner and a leader behind the scenes working with Baghdadi.
Adnani advocated attacks in nations backing U.S.-led operations against the IS group. The U.S. and India announced Tuesday their strengthening cooperation in the fight against terrorism. Secretary of State John Kerry speaking following strategic and commercial talks with Indian officials Tuesday in New Delhi.
We agreed to expand the exchange of terrorist screening information, to deepen cooperation in designating terrorist groups at the United Nations, and to expedite mutual requests for legal assistance. More broadly, we reiterated our unwavering commitment to the protection of our citizens and to defeating the terrorist mantra of bigotry and of hate.
Kerry said they also agreed on a joint cyber framework to reduce cybercrime. In Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, Tuesday, a suicide bombing claimed by the insurgent group Al-Shabaab killed at least 10 people, including soldiers and civilians, wounded at least 30 others near the presidential palace. The blast damaged two hotels. Among the wounded, at least one minister and some state radio journalists. Italy Tuesday held a mass funeral for victims of last week's earthquake amid the ruins of Amatrice, the small town that bore the brunt of the disaster.
Siamo qui per ricordare e per pregare.
The Bishop of Rieti read out the names of the more than 240 victims, President Sergio Mattarella, Prime Minister Matteo Renzi, and a senior representative of Pope Francis were among the hundreds of mourners at the service. Prosecutors have opened an investigation into the August 24 quake, as many buildings crumbled despite having been renovated with public anti-seismic funds. South Korean officials say North Korea executed its vice premier for education and reprimanded two other officials. Seoul earlier this week said two other high-ranking officials had been put to death earlier this month for disobeying leader Kim Jong-un. High-tech giant Apple says it will appeal a European Union decision to fine the California-based giant more than $14 billion in back taxes to Ireland. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. No results yet in Gabon's presidential election as the government has deployed the military and the police.
Since yesterday afternoon, all shops were closed, all streets were empty. Many, many Gabonese left because they were scared of what
could happen
during the night.
That's VOA's Idris Fall in Libreville. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees visits 10 Uganda refugee camps. Cameroon government closes more than 300 schools for operating without authorization. And Kenya's president visits South Sudan and urges President Salva Kiir to implement last year's peace deal.
We are here to say and to ask the government to push along the peace agreement and the reforms that were agreed to under that peace agreement and to see how that can be fast-tracked.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta speaking Tuesday during a one-day visit to Juba. A theater director in Sierra Leone wants to keep traditional theater alive. UN ambassador and Irish rock star Bono promises help for Nigerian refugees, and antibiotic resistance threatens treatment of sexually transmitted infections. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Gabonese continuing to wait anxiously for results from Saturday's presidential election that was supposed to have been announced yesterday, Tuesday. Meanwhile, the government has deployed the army and the police in the capital, Libreville. Ordinary citizens are also said to be stockpiling food in anticipation of possible post-election violence. On the line from Libreville is VOA's Idris Fall, who has been covering the election. Once again, good morning to you, Idris.
Good morning, James, and good morning to your listeners.
Thank you very much again for joining us from Libreville. So what's the news? Do we have any results yet?
No, for the time being, no result in Gabon. The Electoral Commission is still discussing the hidden there in a neighborhood called the City of Democracy. Even the journalist was not allowed to get near the building where they are discussing. And the city is very, 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 very tense. You have police and armed soldiers everywhere, especially in the neighborhood close to where the opponent jumping is living right now. I think we may not have results this morning or maybe later today.
How true is it that the ordinary Gabonese are stockpiling or hoarding food items in anticipation of possible post-election violence?
Well, because since yesterday afternoon, all shops were closed, all streets were empty. Many, many Gabonese left because they were scared of what going to happen during the night. And people are scared. Even my own driver would not want to stay with me because it seemed dangerous for the Gabonese. The only thing new was during the night, after all his militants were gathering at his Quartier General, Jean-Ping called them to calm down. And I think it helped a little bit. But until now, even during the middle of the night, people are still scared.
Once again, Idris, you're saying that the government has deployed the army?
Yes. The army had been deployed, I think, since Saturday. But since yesterday, you will have troops in the big boulevard. You will have armored vehicle, and soldiers are armed. Yes, they are very, very, very visible inside the city. And you have controls, post controls. Yesterday night, we were arrested, and while we were a group of journalists traveling from the place where we had dinner, but we had been arrested at least three times by police asking for papers. Yes, the army is very, very visible.
That's VOA's Idris Fall in Libreville covering the Gabonese election. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has urged South Sudan's leaders to implement last year's peace deal and stabilize the country. Mr. Kenyatta made a one-day visit Tuesday to Juba, the first head of state to visit since deadly fighting erupted last month between soldiers loyal to President Salva Kiir and those backing former First Vice President Riek Machar, who fled the capital soon after as a result of the violence. Tito Justin reports from Juba.
Speaking to reporters after his closed-door meeting with President Kiir, President Kenyatta says he is here to encourage South Sudan's leaders to concentrate on bringing back law and order to the country.
To ensure that there is peace, to encourage them to ensure that there is stability in South Sudan, which are the key ingredients for the prosperity that we wish for the people of South Sudan. And I believe that that is why they struggle so hard to achieve their independence, not for war, but for them to be able to prosper.
Mr. Uhuru says he wants South Sudan leaders to continue to implement the IGAD brokered peace agreement, which President Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar signed over a year ago.
We are here to give encouragement and support. We are here to say and to ask the government to push along the peace agreement and the reforms that were agreed to under that peace agreement and to see how that can be fast-tracked.
Earlier this month, the newly installed First Vice President Taban Dengai paid an official visit to Nairobi, where he asked Kenyan officials to invest in South Sudan to help restore its devastated economy. Kenyatta promised that Kenya would provide both moral and material support to South Sudan.
To help accelerate this process so that we can ensure we have peace and stability, and then ultimately, working together as a region, begin to work for the prosperity of our region and our people.
President Kiir insists that President Kenyatta's visit to Juba is proof that South Sudan is now at peace.
There is no fight in South Sudan, there is no war. People are very peaceful in Juba town. And so whatever people say, it is not the situation on the ground. And for President Uhuru to come to Juba as the first head of state to come to Juba after our crisis, it shows that the regional leadership is with us.
Kenya is one of a handful of neighboring countries expected to contribute to a 4,000-strong regional protection force under a resolution recently approved by the United Nations Security Council. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, has embarked on a tour of Uganda's overcrowded refugee centers. Since violence began last July, nearly 90,000 South Sudanese have crossed into Uganda seeking shelter. As Elizabeth Pollard reports from Gulu, Grandi is visiting as tension in the centers is growing.
At Nyamanzi Transit Center in northern Uganda, refugees greet the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, with song and dance. Originally intended as a quick waypoint before settlement, Nyamanzi currently houses thousands of refugees in makeshift tents. One family coming from Pagari says life has been difficult.
Because every day we are now almost 2 months, every day beans, no change. No blanket, no saucepan for cook, even no bucket.
The government is trying to ease congestion by transferring refugees to Bidi Bidi, a new settlement able to house 100,000 refugees. Yet fears of underdeveloped infrastructure, sanitation, possible spies, and violence has many refugees too afraid to resettle, many saying they would rather return to South Sudan. A number of refugees say that when they resisted transfer last month, police shot tear gas into the camp.
We have ran from South Sudan because of gun. And then we reached here also, the police, Uganda government, they use bombardment. Even the children, even all people, they are crying. Because this bomb, they are red pepper, even affected some eyes, ears.
The UNHCR says they're unaware of any event in which police fired tear gas at refugees. They also say while they are still building at Bidi Bidi, refugees can be assured they will have access to water, food, and shelter in the new camp. Grandi says the Ugandan government has done a remarkable job settling new refugees, but the world must pay attention to the emergency in Uganda.
Nowhere in the world I have seen, and I've been in many refugee situations, nowhere in the world have I seen people settled with land and with the beginning of shelter in less than 2 months. 22,000 here in Pagirinha alone, and that's not the only group. But I want to warn everybody, if we don't get more resources and if the influx from South Sudan continues, it will be difficult to maintain these levels and to continue the response for the new waves that will come.
Grandi says the international community should respond to the crisis the same way it responded to the migrant crisis in Europe.
There we are funded 60-70%, here 20-30%. This is not right. We need to put this right.
Uganda is home to around 570,000 refugees, mostly from Congo, Burundi, and South Sudan. And although most South Sudanese say they long to return home, there has been no indication of when violence there will end. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Gulu, Uganda.
Today's Wednesday, August 31st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send shout-out to listeners on our VOA affiliate station, Brila FM in Nigeria, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, and Rush FM in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is now 16 minutes past the hour. Irish rock star Bono, an ambassador for the UN High Commission for Refugees, is pledging to help relieve the humanitarian crisis in Nigeria after an invitation from Aliko Dangote, Africa's richest man. Bono visited a camp of 2.3 million displaced people in the northeastern part of the country, which has been severely hit by the Boko Haram insurgency. Faiza El Mazuri has the story as narrated by Fifth Lapidus.
Life is hard enough for adults living in these camps for the internally displaced in Nigeria. For children, the conditions are far more dangerous and life-threatening. At a press conference in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, human rights activist and rock singer Bono shared some horrifying statistics.
We know there's 50,000 kids going to die before the end of the year. According to the UN, if they don't receive, I think they're looking for 300. We've only got $100 million in response so far. So already the resources are just only a fraction of what they need to be.
Though the military here, the Nigerian military, have made progress in pushing back Boko Haram, there are no homes for these displaced persons to go back to, where their towns are gone, their villages are gone, they're razed. You know this. I didn't.
Nigerian businessman Aliko Dangote says the global partnership is needed to boost the domestic relief efforts carried out by his foundation.
We have actually spent over $4.5 billion naira, you know, and we'll continue to spend until the end of the, program.
Bono has pledged to use his influence to raise relief funds and return to the region with help. But time is short and the need great. For writer Faisal Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thousands of Cameroon students and their teachers are returning from holidays to discover their schools have been shut down. The government says more than 300 schools have been closed because they are operating without authorization. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, officials say the schools were shut down because of poor academic standard.
This instructor at a secondary school called College Agile in Cameroon's capital is using a loudspeaker to ask hundreds of parents, guardians and children gathered outside to go home. But the parents insist they will leave only when they are assured that the school will be opened. The school is one of 76 secondary and 245 elementary schools closed in Cameroon for operating illegally or under poor conditions. One of the parents, Ayansi Gloria, says she has already paid school fees for her two children. She says the government should not close the school at the beginning of the school year. It should have closed them during the holiday to give parents enough time to prepare and before they paid school fees. She says they are not sure of getting their money back. Another parent, Neba Ngwa Valentine, says his daughter, who went to register for the school year that begins September 5, informed him the government ordered the school not to open its doors.
learning can never take place in a very nasty environment. Those same schools don't afford toilets. They don't have water. Sometimes you discover founders of some schools are mechanics, whom their own educational level is just first school leaving certificate. To me, it's unacceptable. You see a school in somebody's private home, we know that a school is supposed to have a football field. A school is supposed to have an orchard. But this is not the case.
An advisor to the Presbyterian Education Authority Teachers Trade Union, Akwanga Theophilus, says schools owned by missionaries that are generally believed to be of better standards and quality have also been sealed. He accuses Cameroon's government of not respecting the procedures for establishing schools.
You see that there is something fundamentally wrong. Documents normally are supposed to have been prepared and forwarded to the ministry for formal authorization for the creation and opening to be granted. But the law again says that if you have deposited these documents and within 30 days, no reaction is coming from the government, that silence is consent that you should go ahead.
The government of Cameroon is asking school proprietors to provide basic needs like running water, toilets, and playgrounds. Cameroon Ministry of Secondary Education Secretary General Leke Tambo says some schools may reopen if certain conditions are met. He says the government has also asked the schools to refund school fees to parents. This is not the first time Cameroon has closed schools for operating illegally or without some of the necessary authorization documents. In 2013, 750 schools were closed because, again, owners had not provided basic needs. But the Teachers' Trade Union of Cameroon said the schools simply ignored the instructions and continued functioning with the protection of corrupt education officials. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A well-known theater director in Sierra Leone is inspiring people to be proud of their culture through traditional theater. He says he's tired of Sierra Leoneans living for greener pastures and the negative images often shown of his country. It's a challenging task as interest in traditional theater has decreased. But as Nina DeVries reports from Freetown, the theater director says he's determined to keep it alive.
From a local church group in Freetown are singing a traditional song in the Mende language. They're rehearsing for an upcoming performance to celebrate the 40-year anniversary of their church. They also want to do that traditionally, and so they've called in Charlie Hafner to help them. He's the best theater director in the country, says president of the church group, Comfort Cargo.
He's the backbone of these plays in Sierra Leone.
Hafner is known for using traditional songs, costumes, and dances as a form of storytelling, as well as dramas that do not involve a script. That's why Cargbo wanted him to work with her group. It's also a way to share culture with younger generations.
Most of our children now in Freetown, they did not know anything concerning those things. But if we come with those things, and then I think they will have some ideas about what was going in the provinces, what we are, our people were doing there in those days, and then I think they will start to learn from there.
Hafner is the founder and director of Freetown Players International Theater Group, which has been operating for about 30 years. His play, Amistad Kata Kata, about the 1839 slave rebellion, was written before the Hollywood film Amistad and has been performed internationally. Hafner says many of the performances the theater group does can be used to raise awareness. When they do performances in local communities, it's a way to bring people together and understand an issue. Domestic violence and teenage pregnancy are just some of the topics the theater group will tackle.
I just believe that maybe there was a voice somewhere that told me, you know, you have to get on this. Not only getting on it, but don't follow the normal trail, but shift a bit, find a new path, and leave footprints for others to follow. And that is what I think I'm doing, and that is what I think has made a difference.
All right, but one or two things. When I see some parts in the way, now inside room for take place. No.
Hafner says what he really enjoys is coaching others, such as a women's church group. The Freetown Players Group is mainly made up of young adults, including Hafner's son, Tootie. They have jam sessions daily, and Tootie Hafner also wants to keep traditional theater alive and inspire other youth.
And we go to communities, perform for them, you know, and then make sure messages are passed on. Like the humanization program in Sierra Leone, we did plays and songs and go to this community where they are affected and they listen to us.
Charlie Hafner and his son hope that listening will continue for years to come. Nina DeVries, VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
The World Health Organization has warned of a growing threat of antibiotics, resistant to three common sexually transmitted infections. The WHO is issuing updated guidelines on treatment that nations should follow to reduce their spread and improve sexual and reproductive health. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis are major public health problems. The World Health Organization estimates the three sexually transmitted diseases together infect more than 200 million people globally every year. Chlamydia, which can cause infertility in both men and women, infects 131 million people. The WHO says those who come down with this common bacterial infection frequently also have gonorrhea. And that poses a particular problem because antibiotic resistance is most widespread and growing most rapidly in the treatment of gonorrhea. Medical Officer Teodora Wee in the WHO's Department of Reproductive Health and Research says WHO guidelines issued in 2003 recommended the antibiotic quinolones for the treatment of gonorrhea. She says the new guidelines advise against using this drug.
And in most countries in Africa, they still continue to use quinolones because it's a WHO recommendation. And we know that there's already very high resistance to this. So that's why we need to update this and say quinolones could not be used anymore.
We says other safe, effective treatments are available. While a relatively small 5.6 million people are infected with syphilis, its potential impact can be devastating. Fetal death can result if a pregnant woman transmits syphilis to her fetus. In 2012, the WHO reports untreated syphilis infections in pregnant women caused an estimated 200,000 stillbirths and neonatal deaths. The new WHO guidelines recommend a single dose of benzathine penicillin. Health officials say the injectable antibiotic is the most effective treatment for syphilis and cheaper than oral antibiotics. While the guidelines recommend safe, effective medical treatments for chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis, the WHO notes condoms remain one of the most effective methods of protection against sexually transmitted infections when used correctly and consistently. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Southern African governments are backsliding on human rights as nations repeatedly violate basic rights and defy their own constitutions. According to Human Rights Watch, the situation is being thrown into sharp relief as Swaziland, the continent's last absolute monarchy, takes over this week as chair of the Southern African Development Community. That's it for this Wednesday, August 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryer, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Botti in Washington, saying have a nice day, Africa.
In our next edition of Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on democracy and the rule of law in Uganda. Join us right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.